Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
We're sort of looking at each other during, right?
in a way, yeah. We're... Oh, I don't know what just happened.
You're getting echo from the YouTube video.
Oh, man. Come on. Come on, the internet.
You gotta mute the YouTube video.
You know what happened is I probably had the window open in the background somewhere. I don't want that.
You know, an open window in the background can get you in a lot of trouble if it's playing audio, Ben.
Adam, this was the episode, of course, where we rolled a fuck it, we'll do it live, and so we are live streaming this live to some people. I don't know if this is something anybody cares about. It certainly gave us a lot of stress figuring out how to get it set up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably never do this again.
Just take it off the board.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to distract myself with the stream window. I'm pretty sure there's like a chat room over there and stuff. I don't think I want to look at that during, because I think I want this to be an us recording an episode together type of episode.
All right, that's a good idea. I can get with that.
But I thought maybe a good marin to do in that case was maybe opening gifts from Friends of DeSoto that have come in the mail.
You know why I love this idea? It's because it's probably the segment that takes the most editing.
Yeah, people will really see how the sausage gets made.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
I have already begun tearing open the first gift. It is from Perry of Miramar, Florida. That's Fighter Town, USA, Florida.
Oh, cool. Second best Miramar.
Right. It's like we have a couple of minifigs that are made to look like us. I don't know if those are reading in the camera.
Oh, man. I wonder if this is the same minifig genius that came to one of our Brooklyn shows and brought entire sets of minifigs for both of us.
All right. We've been sent a card and a letter. And I will read the letter from Perry and what looks to be Joel. All right, so here's the letter. Ben and Adam, last year, when my wife and I presented you with a collection of customized Greatest Gen Lego minifigs, there you go.
That's the same guy!
Yeah. After the Greatest Gen Con show at the Bell House in Brooklyn, I promised to send some Nubbin Bugs to complete the collection. Finally, here they are, but with additional bonus minifig versions of yourselves as Wrath of Khan era Starfleets.
Cool.
Oh yeah, there are Nubbin Bugs in here. They're at the bottom.
Oh, they're little guys.
See the Nubbin Bug? Letter goes on to say, Greatest Gen has been a true inspiration and helped to pull me out of a long period of depression and creative stagnation. Making media for work is never the same as creating it out of love and a desire to put something entertaining and informative into the world. The enjoyment we derive from Greatest Gen was the impetus for creating our own podcast. that you don't have to name, as we have promised ourselves that we will just purchase a shiny new Priority One before the end of 2019. That's very classy, Perry.
That's classy. I think we should name it.
Yeah, their podcast is called You Haven't Seen What.
You know, I have some of that You Haven't Seen What stuff around here, too. I knew that Perry had a podcast. He talked to us about it in line, but I think I got like three or four different pieces of collateral for different podcasts, and then I couldn't remember which one was associated with the Legos.
It's a lot to keep organized, for sure.
And we're bad at it to begin with.
Wow. Thank you, Perry and Joelle, for such a nice message and for these awesome custom minifigs.
Those are great.
You want to open yours up?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, wow. This is great. The first item is the type of teacup that Captain Picard might have in his ready room.
And that's great.
In it is a miniature bottle of a George Clooney-endorsed brand of tequila.
Love the Clooney tequila.
Oh, man, there's two of them. So we'll have to share some tequila together next time you're in town. What else do we have here? This looks like a... tea, Earl Grey, Elkars.
Wow.
Container. Oh, man. It looks like a mercury capsule themed tea infuser.
All right.
From the folks at Think Geek. My apologies for not name checking you, kind friend of DeSoto. Maybe there was a card and it got separated from the stuff at the show. That's unfortunate, if possible. Do you got one more package there? Is that what I see?
Final box is so heavy. This is a 18-pound box. I know it because the USPS says so on its label. Let's see what's inside. It's from Robert out of Dayton, Nevada. It's so heavy that it's actually burst.
Oh, wow.
There's a busted side. Oh, boy. I think Robert has sent us Gages the Video Game.
Whoa!
on all three of its compact discs.
Wow. I definitely have seen a lot of people speculating online about which submarine game Gages might have been. So did he nail it? Is this the correct game?
It is. Oh, he also included a couple more video games. Of course, the very popular Star Trek Klingon Interactive Adventure and and Star Trek Borg, the interactive movie.
I was recently cleaning out my parents' house with them, and I discovered a copy of Star Trek Borg, the interactive movie from my childhood. I have no memory of ever experiencing that.
Also in the box, the Obsessed with Star Trek quiz game.
Does that have like a computer built into the book?
It does. We've got the Star Trek versus the X-Men comic book.
Wow.
The Star Trek audiobook titled IQ on tape, it looks like.
Is it possible that Robert does not like our podcast? I mean, he's like, well, I don't like any of this crap, but I know who does.
There is a letter, though, that may go some way toward explaining what I have here. Letter goes like this. Dear Adam and Ben, I meant to give you this at Greatest Gen Con in LA, but forgot to bring it. Also, thank you, Ben, for asking if I wanted the three show posters I bought signed. Otherwise, I would have just walked out of the club without getting them signed. Nice work, Ben.
Nobody has ever turned me down if I asked something, if they wanted something signed. Which surprises me.
I'm used to being turned down every time I propose something. Included is the classic submarine game Gages, a game that stars several Trek guest stars, including Jim Mensland.
No kidding.
Oh, that Chris Brenner.
You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
Also, thank you for being such a good source of entertainment for my friend Crystal. Yes, the same Crystal mentioned in the episode Love Those Puffs, The Phoenix Problem, and Business Casual Station.
That's the Crystal that got the tattoo.
I love our episode titles because they are totally inscrutable to me. Even now, the letter concludes, "You've been such a good influence on her. She has created her own podcast, one which I've been dragged into being a co-host on. Thank you for indirectly pulling me into the biz." It's from friend of DeSoto, Robert.
Wow. Very Thanks, cool. Robert.
All right. A lot of stuff for my own shelf there. Thanks to our very generous friends of DeSoto.
That was quite a haul. Adam, do you want to get into the episode we came to talk about today?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea, given that we spent 20 minutes on our mail call. Actually, one of the shorter ones, if memory serves.
Yeah, we did great.
Yeah. All right, Ben, let's get to it. It's Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 19, Shattered Mirror.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So this episode starts with Jake long facing it at the spot on the promenade where he and Nog customarily hang out. Everybody kind of clocks this. Specifically, Odo.
Enjoying the view.
Who comes over and explains to Jake that, like, it was never Jake that Odo was chasing away. It was Nog, and Jake was just kind of guilty by association.
Yeah, Jake's sad to be at the hanging rail.
It just doesn't feel the same without Nog.
I guess not. What do you make of Jake's outfit in this episode? Sort of he's combining patterns, Ben, which I know from looking at you is a thing that you'd be okay with.
Well, he's got like the purple sleeve and then the Greyhound bus seat upholstery pattern.
Yeah.
On the other. I think Jake can rock this.
I think he can too.
It's a little more tunicky, and they've definitely, like, we are definitively out of the Jake Nuck era.
You know what? You really get a sense for the colors and patterns when Odo rolls up on him and stands right next to him, because you rarely get such an A and a B of Brown Town right next to Neapolitan ice cream.
I thought that this scene was it was a little uneven for me because Jake is also complaining about writer's block. And, you know, it implies that he's sad about a whole bunch of stuff and not just the absence of Nog. But Nog becomes kind of the central topic of conversation when Quark rolls up.
Quark does the thing he does best, which is like pop the emotional balloon that someone else inflated. He's like, yeah, I miss him too, because I could use a good waiter.
The first kind word I think we've ever heard Quark say about Nog's skills as a waiter.
Right.
He also says something about Jake playing Domjot with himself. And I wondered if that was just a euphemism for jacking it.
Jack it, human.
Human, Dutch penis.
Do not neglect balls, human.
I've never seen the balls roll that well for anyone.
Have gym sock nearby, human.
You know, if Picard could go back to his youth and change how many times he jacked it, he wouldn't change a thing. That's what we learned from Tapestry, right?
I should have done this a long time ago.
Do you think Picard jacked it into Jodhpur's?
If he's anything like me, it's just whatever's at the top of the hamper when the feeling strikes him. So probably Jodhpur's 90% of the time.
Sure. Every serious writer has their own saddle to jack it into, Ben.
Oh, yeah. It really leaves the leather feeling supple. Anyways, Jake wanders home and finds that his apartment contains more than just his father.
Mom?
I think this is the first of many moments in the episode that feels tonally just off. And it's not because of a Mirror Universe character or setting. Jake's attitude at seeing her, one would imagine, would be more emotional than just happy son seeing a long lost mother. Like, there seems to be like a lack of depth to the feeling.
I really interpreted that as like a like his brain is shattered in that moment. Like he can't do the math on why she would be there, and so doesn't know, like, he doesn't have like a knee-jerk emotional reaction because of that.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand what he's seeing.
Yeah, I mean, he should be committed to the infirmary at this point, and he should not be seen for the rest of the episode.
This episode does spend a lot of time explaining itself, like back explaining itself to viewers. And after seeing that What We Left Behind documentary, all I can think of is the kind of television viewer most people were in this era. And also, like, I mean, one thing they talked about in that doc was that this was a syndicated television show, so different affiliates would put it on at different times. Sometimes they wouldn't air an episode one week and would just air the next episode the next week. You could miss pieces of it and never know. And, like, this episode is about catching up with a bunch of shit that has happened in the Mirror Universe in our absence. Like, the camera has not visited the Mirror Universe in a long time, and a ton of things have changed about it. And so it has, like, this weird job of, like, feeling like a continuation of a story, but an episode that a lot has been happening just entirely off camera, and it would be very confusing if you were just kind of a casual viewer.
You know? This is a terrible episode for that kind of viewer.
If you tune in like 20 minutes late to the episode and you maybe missed the last three episodes of DS9, you're like, wow, things are really messed up on this show these days.
It's weird how hard they lean into that sensibility here. I tend to like it most times. But it, you know, to the degree that it works in a regular mainline episode, there are far more hurdles to leap in a Mirror Universe episode.
Yeah, for sure. The effect of the smash cut to theme song is, you know, it's Jake going, "Mom," and then when we come back from commercial, it's like, "Nah." She explains, "I'm not your mom. I am Malibu, your mom."
Which means she has no genitalia.
That's right.
Yeah. The camera goes in close just to confirm that.
Yeah.
No, she's from the MU, and what she claims is that she's there to just kind of give Cisco a cool update on how things are going over there. I was surprised that nobody was suspicious of that.
Well, the reason that we're not suspicious as a viewer is because Ben Sisko isn't. Like, we're being taught how to treat the situation through how chill Ben Sisko is. If he were questioning the surprise of her appearance, that would be one thing. But it seems as though this may be a regular hang, and it could even not be the first time that they've done this.
There's a lot implied by just the fact that they've been deep in conversation when Jake walks in.
Right.
So, yeah, like maybe they do this all the time.
If that were the case, if you were Jake Sisko, and if your storyline was a little more sophisticated, wouldn't you be a little hurt by your mom being hidden from you like this?
Hey, Dad, why is this the first time I'm meeting her?
Dad, you seem very relaxed.
So Sisko gets kind of called away on some Bajor emissary business, and Jake sticks around to hang with Mom. She hands him the cup of coffee, and he gets kind of lost in just the physical contact of being there with her.
I mean, it could be the Folgers crystals also. Really lost in the flavor.
Best part of waking up is your evil Mirror Universe mother. So we catch up with Sisko in his office. He's hanging with Kira. Did you notice that he has a pretty sick model of the International Space Station with the space shuttle attached to it off in the corner now?
I did notice that.
That was really cool.
That's neat.
I wondered how far along the construction of the ISS was at the time of this episode, because that was I think it was kind of contemporaneous with this, that all those pieces were being launched.
Ben Sisko looks at it wistfully, like, now there's a station without a vol problem. Yeah, it's in this interregnum that Jake has been disappeared by his Mirror Universe mother, because when Captain Sisko returns to his quarters, he gone.
Yeah, and it's just there's a little gadget, left behind. But he takes it up to Ops and he's like, hey, what's this thing? And O'Brien's like, oh, this must be one of the devices for tricking out the transporter to go between universes. And they're pretty quickly like mounting a rescue effort. It's like Kira, O'Brien, and Sisko are gonna arm up and head to the MU to rescue Jake.
I love that the suspicion is never that something bad has happened.
Yeah.
I think both Kira and O'Brien are like, you know, maybe she just wanted to give him a tour of the mirror universe. That sounds like something he would want, right?
Well, to her credit, Kira goes and gets some dustbusters,
yeah.
But O'Brien is like, why are we getting guns? What do we need with these?
Yeah.
Think outside the box a little bit.
Or just think about the mirror universe at all.
What do we know about the mirror universe? I love that in Starfleet, like your around the office uniform is the same thing as your field uniform. Like there's no Rambo or commando getting ready for action scene. There's no like Batman clicking his belt on and pulling up his boots.
That's a real shame.
You know, they're just like, yeah, we'll grab some dustbusters. We'll get on this transporter pad and we'll go. So they get on the transporter pad. They energize, but only Sisko disappears. And he appears in Evil Ops, where Smiley greets him and explains that...
Jake's not going anywhere. And neither are you.
They intentionally grabbed Jake so that just Sisko would be drawn out.
I love the choreography of bad intentions here, because like right at the climax of what Smiley is saying, two thugs emerge from from side stage with guns.
Right, and I really wondered, like, why weren't they just there with the guns to begin with?
Right? I mean, they were practicing that the entire day before Prime Universe Sisko showed up.
Listen, if we don't rush in with these guns, we won't have an opportunity to go, hot, 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 hot.
The exposition that Smiley lays on Sisko is actually really cool and interesting. And that is, after taking control of Terok Noir, the rebels have gone to work on building a Mirror Universe Defiant out of the plans that Smiley took from the Prime Universe. Only the problem is they can't get it to go because of the same structural integrity issues that Prime Universe Little D had.
You know, because Sisko has kind of intimate construction knowledge of the Little D, they think they can extort him into helping them fix the nasty little D that they're building in their universe. And that will be the price to get Jake and go home.
Yeah, because if they can't pull off this amount of work in this little time,
you and your son will die here along with the rest of us.
The bad guys, the Cardassian / Klingon / Bajoran alliance, are kind of bearing down on the station. And the rebels are going to try and mount a defense of it, but they just are kind of outgunned and outclassed by this force that is coming to take it back. So if they have a working nasty little D, they're going to be in a lot better shape.
I know this question destroys the episode, but we know from Smiley's previous trip to the Prime Universe that you can transport entire ships there. Why not just steal the Defiant from the Prime Universe?
Hmm.
Right?
We also run into Malibu Bashir.
You must have missed that cheery face.
Who really lacks a level of chill in the Mirror Universe. He does not really care at all about Sisko's intentions one way or another as long as he's agreed to help them. And he even decks Sisko, saying like, you know, I thought you were the Sisko from this side of the line, and he can punch me, but you can't punch me. So this is, I owed you this one.
I feel like punches are louder in the Mirror Universe. Did you get the sense that this was a real, like, Batman TV show sound effect used here?
And the punch ledger is really being observed very right. scrupulously in the Mirror Universe. Everybody knows who owes who a punch.
Right, right.
So Sisko is kind of like, yes, I will help you fix your nasty little D, but I want to see my son first. And they're like, we're not surprised to hear you say that, so let's go show you where he is.
And he's at Mirror Universe Quarks, which is now Mirror Universe Nog's.
Nog is the proprietor in a world where Quark and Rom have both been killed. And Nog has really embraced the Quark role with quite a bit of alacrity.
This is my father. He's tall, too.
I think he's not quite, doesn't quite have as much joie de vivre as Quark, but definitely is a womanizing asshole the way Quark is.
He's more Al Swearengen than Prime Universe Quark is, I think. And Jake is like approaching this as if he's in an amusement park.
This place is unbelievable. Chief O'Brien, Dr. Bashir, Dax, they're all here.
This is the other issue of tone in the episode, is that there's never any danger here. And Jake specifically never feels like he's in danger at any moment.
Yeah, the episode is at great pains to explicate that Jake knows all about the Mirror Universe. His dad has told him basically everything. And yet he brings an utter naivete to the danger of the Mirror Universe.
Right. It's like he went to the Star Wars part of Disneyland and all the stormtroopers are carrying real guns. And he's still treating it like it's an amusement park ride. It's weird. It's a weird tone.
Like, nobody was like, you know Odo? Your friend Odo? In the Mirror Universe, they shot him and he turned into, like, glop. It was disgusting.
He's a mist. You're actually breathing him in right now. It's disgusting.
Yeah, you can't get that smell out, you know?
I think Jake's just happy to get some Dabo girl affection in this scene, though he does not observe the Keanu Reeves rule of not touching them.
Keanu Reeves hover hand?
Yeah. He's not doing that. Who he's fallen for even more than a Dabo girl is for his mother. In a mother-son kind of way. And he's fallen for the Mirror Universe as a place.
He is really starry-eyed and really in love with the idea of, like, what if Mom just moved back in with us and we live together again?
Yeah.
She is a very cunning character because she really stokes that fire in him in a way that is, like, very knowingly exploitive. But I think it kind of comes back and bites her in the ass in the end.
Outside of her actions, you never get the mustache twisty bad guy vibe from her, which I think you're expected to feel, right?
Right. I think you have to do that math yourself, which is, I think, one of the strengths of this episode is that the evil she is doing is not, you know, she isn't wearing a black hat while she's doing it.
And the conflict is presented to us as a conflict between Captain Sisko and her, in that Ben Sisko is down for the cause, but not for the method.
Right. Well, we cut away from all of this excitement to the inbound fleet headed up by Regent Worf, who is, I guess, a rung above the Kira character in the Mirror Universe. He's like some kind of regional governor or something. And he's captaining a huge Klingon battle cruiser that's got an escort of dozens of birds of prey and Cardassian warships. It is really fun to see the cruiser scaled against these other ships in the way it is.
Yeah.
It's like Star Destroyer versus TIE Fighter level of size difference.
This is much bigger than a Cleave ship, right? This is probably like 4 Cleave ships.
Seems really big.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how big in the Cleave ship system of measures.
One thing about this ship, though, that I know you and I liked a lot is the sound of chains is present. And that is for a very specific reason, because the chain in question is wrapped around Garrick's neck.
Your fairness and good judgment are everything I've heard them to be.
And Garrick, you know, has a much different role in the Mirror Universe. He's not just like a super evil tailor.
He's a gimp.
Yeah, he's been kind of metal bikini laid here.
Up to the point where he kind of makes a pass at Worf in this scene.
He does, and
do you think he goes in, like, with both hands?
Maybe if Worf was game. I don't know. I mean, one thing we've talked about on Greatest Discovery a lot is that, like, the Mirror Universe is, like, awful and fascist, but on a species level, because, like, within the Terran Empire, women seem to have as much power as men, and there's no, like, racial hierarchy as far as we can tell. within it. So it's interesting that the same is true on the other side of that conflict in the mirror universe, like the Klingon Cardassian alliance. Like they're very chill about LGBTQ people being part of the military in this fleet.
So they have good qualities too, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is there's good people on both sides.
Oof.
No, just like the fact that that Garak makes a pass and Worf says you're not my type, and it's left at that is like pretty progressive, you know?
Yeah.
You are not my type.
For 1996 or whatever year this episode came out.
I sort of think that the reason that Worf isn't down for any of this is less about not being attracted to Garak and more about the blame that he assigns Garak for the loss of Tarak Nwar, right? Like, I think attraction begins with respect for the person, and Worf just doesn't respect Garak for what happened.
What are you doing now? Exactly.
So the progress is beginning on fixing the nasty little D. Sisko is really throwing himself into the work, and they show him really like toiling on this ship with lots and lots of people. I guess they have to reconfigure hull integrity field. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. But if you see the exterior shot, it looks like it needs a lot more than just some integrity field improvements. Like there are plates missing off of its hull.
This place is a dump.
And they have not taken down the scaffolding around it. It's kind of space dock, but on the side of the station. And that was a model effect that I wondered if it was like blending model effects and CG. Because the structure around the ship is pretty finely detailed, and I wondered if that was added as a digital layer.
What, you mean like the two popsicle sticks extending from the station, bracing the ship against it? Yeah, that was awesome.
It was rad. Into the bridge of the nasty little D walks Mirror Universe Dax, who slaps Sisko and cites her reason for slapping him as having had sex with her under false pretenses.
To me, this slap was telegraphed because of her "Can I speak to your manager?" haircut. Everyone knows that Prime Universe Sisko slept his way through the entire Mirror Universe last time he was there.
Yeah. We should also hate Sisko for that.
He should have been more reluctant to go on this trip. Like, when he gets up on the transporter pad at Ops, he tells Kira and O'Brien, he's like, look, you're going to hear things about me in this universe that are not true. It's the
Kira, if you meet somebody that looks like you, maybe I should just start my apologies now.
Yeah, bad look.
I'm glad that chicken kind of comes home to roost at least a little bit in this episode.
Right.
But I guess they need him, right? Like, he has a little leverage because he's the only person that really knows how to fix the vibration issue.
Yeah, and I guess that's enough. Still, he is made uncomfortable enough to leave Ops at this point, which is conveniently around the same time where Intendant Kira is being tortured by Bashir.
Yeah, she, like, I guess, was attempting to escape, and
she was going to use the Defiant to escape?
That wouldn't have gone very far. They should just let her escape and have the Defiant shake itself apart in space.
The logic in geography here doesn't make a ton of sense to me as to why they would be there. That's probably the worst place for Kira to be to anyone else.
Yeah, she's never going to let anybody have the upper hand, even when she's being tortured. So she's like flirting with Sisko. She is trying to make a deal with him to get her out of the hooscow. Like, I think the idea is that she's being planted here for later. Like, she'll become a utility character later in the episode.
Right. It's just a reminder to the viewer that she's a going concern.
She's a going concern who's obsessed with sex.
Right. Can't forget about that. They do an intro shot later on where they just dolly over her horizontally splayed body, starting at her feet and then ending at her face.
It's really the like the Catherine Zeta-Jones in Entrapment
right
shot of Kira, and it's like, wow, you guys really got away with some shit in this mirror universe.
It's weird that they had that black couch in the brig.
Yeah, who knew that they were doing auditions in there?
We cut back to Worf, and basically every scene involving Worf is just a scene in which he gets pissed at Garak.
If it was not for your incompetence, the rebels would have been destroyed.
Yeah, this is a drum they beat quite a few times in the episode. But I think that's the scene where Garak tries to put the moves on, on Worf to improve his situation. But the past does not go well, Enterprise.
We basically cross-cut scenes like that to scenes of a healthy home life between Mirror Universe Jennifer Sisko and Prime Universe Jake.
Yeah.
Enjoying a family dinner like you might have expected them to had Prime Universe Jennifer Sisko lived.
They kind of both make the case that this is an acceptable relationship to Ben. Like, Ben comes in, I guess, like at the end of a long day of working on the nasty little D, and he's wrung out. But, you know, Jennifer is like trying to comfort him, saying like, hey, like, I know that this is like a rough deal, but this is like actually kind of great for Jake. And, you know, it's an opportunity for him to kind of process his feelings about his mother, who I know I'm not.
Ben Sisko, you have to believe, is aware of his son's internet search history. He also knows that this ain't Jennifer Sisko. If I were Prime Universe Ben Sisko, I'd be trying a little harder to keep them separated.
I don't want to leave a mess.
The word comes down from Smiley that the Alliance fleet is really, really close, and they basically run out of time. Ben has been working around the clock to get the little D fixed up, but he's got to go right back to work. So back in the engineering section of the nasty little D, they have an 8-hour ticking clock. And Malibu Bashir actually offers to kind of go on a suicide mission to slow the Alliance down, which is a kind of surprising bit of selflessness for an MU to exhibit.
I think he's willing to do anything to keep Dax away from Sisko. That's sort of how I read it.
Wow, yeah. Like, one thing that really occurred to me in this episode, and has occurred to me in the past, is that betrayal is kind of like currency in the Mirror Universe. Like, people act surprised about it all the time, but betrayal is kind of like the central feature of the Mirror Universe. So somebody offering to go on a suicide mission should be met with a ton of skepticism, but it is not.
Then it's settled.
And it's instead met with like, okay, let's give you guys like as good a plan as we can before you leave. And so Sisko goes down to talk to Intendant Kira about, like, what can we do to give these guys a fighting chance against the Klingons? In this scene, he actually appeals to Kira's love of betrayal. She's got this idea initially that she's going to be rescued by Regent Worf when he gets to Terek Nor, and she's going to be sitting pretty. And Sisko makes the case for, like, yeah, like, except for you lost control of the station to these idiots, like, a guy named Smiley literally is running the station right now. How good an officer is he going to think you are when he gets here? And so she's persuaded to give him kind of a little bit of secret intel on the Klingon fleet.
Their targeting systems can be fooled. They've been known to chase warp shadows.
I had a lot of problems with how the plot of this episode held together, but this scene I thought was great. I thought everything was very plausible with the leverage that Sisko applies to Kira here.
It's a very tried and true technique in filmmaking that you put your evil characters in more shadow. Kira is always backlit in these scenes.
Right.
And, you know, it's like the Mirror Universe is not a terribly well-lit place, as we know, but she's always much darker than Ben Sisko is. And I thought that just like from an emotional and staging standpoint, this scene worked really well for just a kind of a series of singles, you know, that just cut back and forth. Like, it does a really great job of building the stakes and building the tension and making the case for Mirror Universe Kira betraying her alliance.
Like a lot of the war movies we watch in Friendly Fire, this bit of intel that she gives Sisko is of the form of using subterfuge against a better armed enemy. in wartime.
Yeah.
A moment of levity happens after this on the Alliance flagship. At least that's the way I saw it, Ben. It was, someone has lost the key to Garrick's chains. What are we going to do about this key situation?
You know, a problem we've discussed at length is that Garrick can never convince anybody he's not lying because he's always lying.
Right.
Even when he's telling the truth. I think when he was chained up to Worf's captain's seat, he thought there may be a stabbing in the offing, but not this kind of stabbing, Adam.
Yeah, he only has one knife.
Worf goes into the gut of Garrick before one of his lackeys realizes that he dropped the key to Garrick's chains and it fell in his boot. So that guy gets stuck with keep stabbed Garrick alive or it's your ass. And this is when the very exciting and very well done ship-to-ship combat starts because Malibu, Bashir, and Dax have shown up and they're successfully using the warp shadow technology against the Klingons.
Do you think Kern is alive in this universe? And he's serving at the side of Worf?
Man, I don't know. You think he's like on one of the other ships?
Here's a follow-up question. Do you think Kern in this universe is super chill? Unlike Prime Universe Kern, he's like Stefan Raquel.
People like inviting me to dinner parties because I like all kinds of food. Never complaining about the cuisine.
I know not to put fish eggs on a turkey leg. I'm a bit of a foodie, you see.
Mirror Universe Kern is foodie Kern. We're going to be fighting over this guard when it comes time to name a Shimoda, right, Ben? As soon as I saw this guy's whole deal, I was like, oh no, I have to pick someone else.
Don't worry.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my instinct. I don't use the bucket anymore.
The Klingon fleet is inbound, and they have to mount a defense with the nasty little D. And it's kind of like the deal has been met, right? Like Sisko's arrangement with Smiley was, I'll fix your ship and then you give me my son back and I'll go. And to Smiley's credit, he's going to let Sisko get that deal.
I don't understand why some Mirror Universe people are all the way evil and some are just like neutral.
Yeah. Well, I think Smiley is not that good at the Mirror Universe, you know? In much the same way that I'm not that good at this universe.
But if he wasn't, wouldn't you expect him to die first? I feel like if you've lived this long in the Mirror Universe, it must mean that you are capable of awful things. And I just don't get that read from him.
Well, you know, Mirror Universe God take care of babies and fools.
Well put.
So yeah, they get the nasty little D out of space dock and start licking shots at the Klingon ships. And it's going great. Like, to begin with, it's going great. And then, like, and Sisko is in the captain's chair. But then he's like, clear out, Smiley. I'm gonna take over at the helm and show you how to really fight this thing.
This made me sad. Sisko does this twice to Smiley. He kicks him out of the command chair, and then he kicks him off the helm. That's brutal.
It's pretty rough. Like, was Smiley just, like, sitting off in the corner feeling bad about this for the rest of the episode?
That had to hurt his feelings.
I mean, Sisko says no offense, which might be the first time anybody has ever used those two words in a phrase in the Mirror Universe.
Mm. Yeah, he's like, what?
You mean I'm not supposed to take offense at something you're doing? What?
No, this is like saying not at the end of a phrase, right?
Yeah, everybody thinks it's a bit in the Mirror Universe that's just a joke.
Nothing personal. I just know this ship better than you.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
So yeah, they pull in real close to Worf's cruiser, and it has kind of a Star Wars Stormtrooper level firing accuracy.
Right.
And just cannot hit the nasty little D to save its life. And they really fuck it up really bad. And girders start coming out of the ceiling, And everybody knows in Star Trek that when the girders show up, it is time to go. Like, if you still have warp engines, GTFO when you see girders.
Girders falling is like blood out of the mouth of a character in a horror film.
Yeah.
You're about to die when that happens. Ben, we know about the warp shadow strategy at this point. Strange to me that it's not deployed here by the station.
I agree, and I also wondered about what the MU station armament situation is, because...
Right, it's not shooting either.
Prime Station is bristling with guns at this point, but that is not what is depicted here. No. The station is nearly defenseless, as far as we can tell.
I really love the ships circling the rings and going in and out of them and stuff.
Super cool, like using the station as cover and confusing the warbird about where the nasty little D is, because it's like gone to the other side of the docking ring.
It's great.
And yeah, so the Alliance fleet gets out of there.
We've won.
And the implication is kind of that Garrick may be back on top, because he is the one suggesting that Kira is the real betrayer in the situation to Worf.
Yeah, I mean, she seems to be the patsy for all of this stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of Kira, she has she's mounted a Nog-assisted escape from the jail cell they put her in.
I love that Nog brings her a hotel salad. It is just... It's mixed greens.
An undressed spring mix in a bowl.
Yeah, because it's really about the tray at this point. And how the tray is used to knock out this poor guard. This poor guard who had a wife sent to death by Kira.
It seems like they left him alive, which maybe wasn't super smart OPSEC on Nog's part.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she escapes. She kills Nog. And she's now, like, armed walking around the station. And she runs into Jennifer and Jake.
Not only do you guarantee me safe passage off this station, but you make the perfect gift for the Regent as well.
Does this make Mirror Universe Morn the owner of Quark's bar now?
Yeah, I think that's the...
What is the line of succession on the bar?
He's the designated survivor for the bar.
Do you think Mirror Universe Morn has a little dick?
Yeah, probably. So, yeah, she shoots Jennifer.
No!
Spares Jake so that Jake can get Kira a message.
Before, you were talking about what the currency is in the Mirror Universe, and this is another form of that currency, right? Like, Kira is banking a favor.
Right.
As if favors have a value here.
Right, which is a surprising idea in a betrayal-centric society.
Yep.
But... it kind of holds.
It seems like the $2 bill of currency.
Right.
Like, sort of fun to have as novelty, not very useful when it comes down to it.
But it has the effect of Jake not buying the farm here, so that when Sisko comes back, he can come to the infirmary where Jennifer is about to shuffle loose this mortal coil on the bio bed, and he gets to have another last moment with her.
Yeah, because the previous last moment they had didn't go great. The last moment did not go well, Enterprise. because what Ben told Jen back then was that whatever connection that she felt at the time wasn't real. It was just like a familiarity that a Mirror Universe and a Prime Universe person might have to each other, and that's not real. And so he really hurt her feelings back then. But here on the deathbed is where you confide your true feelings, and those feelings in this case are that Ben Sisko will always feel a connection to Jen, now and after she dies.
Always.
Yeah. And so they kind of hold hands, and she breathes her last, and the Sisko men have to mourn Jennifer Sisko's death one more time. And it's a pretty real scene, I think. The final shot of the episode is just an over-top shot of her dead body.
Ben Sisko loads her body up into a torpedo tube, takes her to the Prime Universe, and shoots her into the Mutara Nebula.
This worked before. I'll just try it one more time.
Jake, help me with this torpedo. Jake's like, what is Mark Iv?
Fuck you.
Morn.
Dear sweet
Morn.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
I think whether or not I like the episode has a lot to do with this ending, and I did not like this ending. Are we just supposed to accept that Smiley upheld his end of the bargain and sent them home? I guess so.
I mean, Smiley has shown an eager willingness to do so already, and that was before Ben helped him repel an overwhelming attack by the Alliance, so...
I guess by even asking that question, I'm just sort of making the case that for the entire episode, the rules of the Mirror Universe change constantly, and I think it's what Star Trek Discovery did very well in making the Mirror Universe threatening and scary. Like, there's so much squish in this universe in Deep Space Nine that the darkness is only ever from the lighting. Like, yeah. The rest of it is just fun. And if I'm supposed to think this is fun, then I can get with that. And I think my problem with it is that I saw Discovery first. And so I'm expecting it to be dark and scary. And because it's not like that, that's why I'm not liking these episodes. Maybe if I had watched these first, I would be liking these a whole lot more. So I think that's my answer to the did you like question. What about you?
I feel like I liked it maybe a little bit more than you. We just, for Greatest Discovery, watched the TNG porn parody fan edit, which is an adult film that is a porn parody of Star Trek The Next Generation, where they cut out all of the adult scenes so that it's just a fan episode. And it's like kind of, I think we were both really knocked back in our seats with how sincere a fan episode it was, with all the fucking taken out.
Are you comparing the Mirror Universe to a adult film with the fucking cut out?
I think what I'm comparing this to is the idea of a fan with a budget trying to right the wrong of how Yar went out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this feels like a, what if we could take a second pass at what happened to Jennifer Sisko?
Right, because this is the last time we see her on the show.
Right, and she's a very capable actor and has really been given very little to do in a universe where it's possible to give somebody a second swing despite their character being dead.
Right.
And so I liked it from that standpoint, just a, like, what would it be like for Jake? Because we didn't really get that take last time. What would it be like for Jake to re-experience the life of his mother in another universe?
Ben, we just watched this episode. Can you tell me how Jake felt the grief of watching his mother die here? Because I couldn't tell you.
You didn't buy it in that last scene?
I kind of didn't. No.
Oh, that's a shame. I really felt like, I think one of Sirach Lofton's strengths as an actor is infectious enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And he gets a ton of time to do that early in the episode, like really excited that he has his mom back to hang out with and spend time with, and the kind of childlike state that interestingly pushes him back into, despite the fact that he's like more or less a grown man now with his own like life ambitions and dreams and everything. And I really did feel the pain in that last scene with him and Sisko. I think that maybe he deserved two or three more beats in the script to, talking to Jennifer. Like, the scene is, like, much more focused on Ben than it is on Jake.
Right.
In that moment, right. Which is a shame. But I think from a performance standpoint, I got there with Sirach Lofton.
Wow.
So maybe we disagree on this one.
That's the diff. I just couldn't get up over the edge. Ben, one part of the show that pays off every time are our priority one messages. You want to see what we have over there?
I would love to.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
All right, it looks like our first priority one message is from Dr. Satok and Lieutenant Zanny Boss and canon. And this message is for our illustrious GM, Joe. I want to thank whoever... Well, I want to thank all of these people for giving me a pronunciation guide here. That is using the characters wisely.
Yeah.
Message goes like this. Joe. The USS Aurora raises a glass of blood wine to the glory of the House of Nanite while we decide how far into the future to temporarily displace our problems. We thank the prophets that a friend of DeSoto is only a little embarrassed to run Star Trek Adventures for us. We only wish Adam and Ben will someday play this RPG for all FODs everywhere.
Wow.
Another invitation to play a silly game, Ben.
What is GM like Dungeon Master but something else? What's the G?
I mean, it could be a typo.
Yeah.
There are people screaming at us right now for not knowing this, but there we go.
It sounds like maybe they're playing the same game as the Mammary Alpha podcast is playing.
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm not saying I don't ever want to play that role-playing game, because I do. I want someone to either D or GM that for me.
Yeah, we would not be good at that. Adam, we have a second priority one message here, and it is from Hot in Hamilton, and it is for Ben and Adam. It goes like this. The warm weather is upon us. I feel bad using AC in my car commuting on more temperate days. But sitting at a stoplight, windows down, listening to a Star Trek podcast? No way! Special thanks to the embarrassment caused by the Greatest Generation for giving me a second reason to drive with the AC on and the windows up.
Yeah.
That is really fun. I have definitely experienced that, driving around, listening to a podcast, and somebody's talking about burping or farting, and I realize that my windows are down and the sound system is probably sharing my weird podcast taste with the entire world.
Yeah, you don't want that.
The rental that the car insurance company got me is a Range Rover.
Wow.
Listen, I don't know a lot about the, like, semiotics of car selection. I know that, like, in car cultures, like, the car you drive says a lot about yourself and the kind of person you're trying to present yourself as to the world.
It's like a colored bandana.
I lived most of my adult life in New York, and I just don't speak the language, so...
Well, one thing that drives good every time is a Priority One message. If you would like us to read any of those, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages about your personal brand of car culture are $100. And commercial messages from car companies themselves are $200, both of which are a great way to support the ongoing production of The Greatest Generation.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I telegraphed it earlier. I'm just going to get there first. I'm going to say it's that doofy guard who loses the key in his boot. How is that guy the best of the best? That ship is filled with 50,000 Klingon warriors, like living in bunk beds.
That should be the honor guard on there.
He should be the best. He should always know where the key is, certainly.
Yeah.
And if you're a Klingon, shouldn't you have two keys?
Mm.
I would think so. So I'm making that guard.
I mean, the key is kind of bifurcated at the tip.
You know what? It is. Yeah.
Which makes me wonder if the prop people know that, you know. Like, are they using Klingon anatomy as part of their inspiration for how they design a key? Because if so, like... That makes me think of keys, like, in such a dirty way, yeah. You know? Keys and locks are super sexual when you come to think about it.
Yeah, they really are. It's a hot take, Ben. Who's your drunk Shimoda?
mine is Jake. Just, you know, and I think that maybe this is kind of complicating my take on the episode, but that naivete, that approach he has to the mirror universe, where it is very clear that he does not have a healthy mistrust of the mirror universe, is very drunk Shimoda like to me. Like,
he's like a toddler wandering into a bad neighborhood,
or like Shimoda just kind of like ignoring the calamitous crisis happening all around him,
right?
And just like chilling in the bar with a bunch of very evil people.
Yep.
So for that reason, Jake is my drunk Shimoda.
Gotta get that cold press.
Slash.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusa today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press latinum. Get that gold press
latinum. Gold press latinum. That's a lot of yammock songs. Ben, it's now time to talk about what episode we'll be watching next.
And in what way we will be watching it, because this was a very special episode. I think a couple hundred people at least tuned into the show, right?
I just clicked open our YouTube feed and lots of chatters, but there's no way for me to see how many there are.
I think it's good that we're not getting complaints that...
Oh, we're getting complaints, Ben.
Good.
We're almost exclusively getting complaints.
Is that really true?
No. It is just a scroll of super fast comments. Oh, people are saying 400.
Wow.
More than
that's
400. That's... Yeah, that's more than I expected.
That is shocking.
Not including the guy on Reddit who complained vociferously about us doing this while he was at work. Sorry, yeah. We didn't schedule this around your work schedule, stranger on Reddit.
I got complaints that we didn't schedule it well for the East Coast or for Great Britain.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about the production of Greatest Gen. We have to produce this on a schedule that works for Ben and me.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not gonna get made. So.
Yeah. But this hopefully will happen again. I think.
Oh, you hope so?
Well, I think now that we know how to do it, I don't care.
Yeah.
There's at least one other video on our YouTube channel as of this recording that should delight anybody that that enjoys our brand of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The next episode, Adam, is season 4, episode 20, The Muse. While Odo provides shelter for a pregnant Lwaxana Troi, Jake Sisko falls under the spell of a mysterious woman.
Can we land on a Quark's bar for this one? Just for old time's sake, given that it's a Lwaxana Troi episode. Is that in range?
I don't know, Adam. It's your role.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
So I think if you roll a 6, which you've never done, that would be a Quark's bar.
I've got the die in my hand. I'm rolling the die. God damn it. I rolled a 2.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Just a 2. It gets us off of the fuck it, we'll do it live square. 2 squares ahead to square 14, which is a regular old episode. And I don't know about you, Ben, but I might turn it into my own private Quark's bar.
Really? Well, I'm really looking forward to that next episode, Adam. We should thank a bunch of people, shouldn't we?
Maybe first off, we should thank all the people who joined the live stream, all 420 of them.
Yeah,
definitely 420 of them, right?
Thank you for risking termination with your various employers. Thank you for finding the time to watch this. I don't know if this will or will not be interesting to anybody, like cutting out, like seeing what the raw thing is that then turns into the real episode. But thanks for sitting through it with us, because this is what it's really like.
It felt like a close approximation to what a show is when we sit down and do it. I don't think there's any mystery anymore.
We really pulled the kimono open.
People who haven't seen us do a live show are probably shocked at what we look like. Surprise!
2 dorks.
Yeah.
And I guess we should also give an extra special thanks to the folks that go to MaximumFun.org/donate and support this show on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
It is for that reason that we were able to do weird, time-consuming and complicated stuff like this. Neither of us have ever done a live stream like this, so this took a lot of research and teching it out and making sure everything worked before we did it.
Your support helps us afford the good internet.
Yeah. Whatever your podcatcher is, why don't you, while we are sitting here talking about this, go onto the app and leave a nice review or recommendation of the show to spread the good word. We love those five-star reviews or the Overcast recommendations. Really, really helps. And if it can't be that, tweet about us. Use the hashtag GreatestGen. Adam is at Cut for Time. I'm Benjamin AHR. Or recommend us IRL to a friend or family member.
You know who the music is by on this show.
It's by the great Adam Ragusea.
That's right.
Who customized the Dark Materia theme song that was, and to some extent still is, the official theme song of Greatest Gen.
Doing the great work.
Check out the Wikia, and if you haven't done the right thing and gotten off of Facebook yet, there's a bunch of Facebook groups out there. There's all kinds of places to connect with the Friends of DeSoto. Also, of course, MaximumFun.org. Our beloved network. There are lots of great shows over there for you to check out, including The Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire, our other 2 shows. And I think anybody that likes this show would like those.
Ben, we've got 2 new merch items in the store, don't we?
We sure do, yeah. We've got the Kern shirt, which is a typography joke. And we've got the Femmes of DeSoto shirt, which is also up there. Katrina Wolf from the Femmes of DeSoto group made the design, and she sent it to us and asked if we were interested in putting it in the store, and we did it. So get those 2 shirts.
They said it couldn't be done. They said it shouldn't be done. We did it. We also need to thank the great J.J. Lindell, who makes movie-quality posters. He tends to put them out on Sunday night, and then I will retweet them on Monday. And who could forget the great Bill Tilly, who makes comedy trading cards about every episode, including this one.
Yeah, we love us some Bill Tilly.
I'm hoping he's not screen grabbing our images here for cards. Please don't. Is that everyone?
I think you've taken us over the finish line.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which I would veto if I could.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.